the 2019 Phillies season is in the books. 81-81 is how they finished. And similar to last year, it had a very disappointing ending to it. Last year it was given where they were and then the historical downward spiral to end the year. And this year it was the huge expectations given all the offseason moves that Matt Klentak made, probably highlighted by the acquisition of Bryce Harper. And then it ends up being a non-playoff team yet again. They were decimated by injury. Their pitching certainly let them down in a big, big way.
Brutal.
Whether you're talking about starting rotation or the bullpen being just hit so hard. But they, as an organization, Joe, still did not go out and address that when they still had opportunity to, and they still had stupid money, according to everybody around. And there were solutions out there that would have bolstered that starting rotation.
Yeah, he was, again, to me, it's irresponsible. First of all, it was an egregious miscalculation that this starting rotation was going to take a step up.
Which
this
included,
year.
Yeah, like he was believing in Zach Eflin. He was believing in Nick Pivetta. Arrieta ended up getting hurt, but he's still, in my opinion, not a two.
It's like Howie Roseman believing in Derek Barnett and Brandon Graham.
There you go.
They went 16-37 down the stretch. 16-37 down the stretch. I don't know what else to say. They didn't go out and get Dallas Keuchel, which I thought was a mistake. Atlanta picks him up, and he actually pitched very well this year for the most part. He would have been a nice addition, maybe a three, with Arrieta being a two, but Arrieta
and
went
Nola
down for the
didn't
season.
Have-
he didn't.
Definitely in the back half did not have Nola kind of performances.
No, he did not.
Some of which was his own doing, and some of it was when he didn't get run support from his teammates.
Which was often.
Yeah.
You know?
And so they didn't win any of his last seven.
That's correct.
Right.
That's brutal.
And I would say those first three of those seven, he pitched well and didn't get the run support. And then he didn't pitch well for certainly the next two. And then it was some combination thereof.
Gabe's got to be miserable that they finished 500. They were up, they were over 500 like the whole season. And the guy being on the hot seat, he knows he's probably on the hot seat. Unless Klentak went to him behind the scenes and said, "You're cool. You're fine for another year." I thought he did that earlier this year. He said, Gabe's our guy. And I thought he almost guaranteed he's going to be back next year. That was before the major collapse. And, I think that Klentak, again, addressed the offense and did a very nice job with the offense. They didn't live up to their part of the deal. They just didn't. Bryce Harper did, 35 home runs, 114 ribs, and JT Realmuto did.
Phenomenal.
But the other guys, they kind of went silent. May 30th, they were 11 games over 500 and leading the division by 3.5 games. And less than 30 days later, they were 6.5 games out.
Yep.
That was the major collapse, in my opinion, at the end of May and June. And from there, it got worse.
All right. So we're asking you, because it's been a full day and nothing has been said about what the Phillies plan to do with their offseason, and they have a lot of things to address, including their manager. Are you bringing him back or are you letting him go? So which way would you have it, or which way do you also feel the organization will go? Because what a lot of people want, some people think, isn't what the organization will do. We've also been talking about the Sixers because it has finally arrived after many of their own offseason moves that some were surprising. They now have their season ready to go. They will start practices tomorrow. And before you know it, they'll be playing the Boston Celtics on opening night. I believe that date is October 23rd.
It's coming. I'm
right excited. Around the corner.
I think everyone's excited. Everyone still has a bad taste in their mouth the way they lost Game 7. And
Sure. Now
Kawhi's not here anymore. It seems like the East is wide open. And maybe the Sixers upgraded. Maybe they got better in the offseason. It remains to be seen. But I think expectations are very high. And I think it's Eastern Conference Finals or bust.
Sure.
Yeah, the West has some pretty talented teams. I don't know if they can get by the West unless there's injuries. But, I'm saying Eastern Conference Finals.
the irony is 2 years in a row. So last year, every team in the East was chomping at the bit because LeBron was finally gone and he had gone to 8 straight finals.
Thank God.
He's out. Let's go.
Thank God.
And then Kawhi comes into the Eastern Conference and
messes things up
or helped Toronto grab it by the horns. And now he's gone.
He did a wonderful job.
So now, once again, it's wide open. It's wide open. And the opportunity is for the Sixers, for sure. By the way, I forgot to tell you when you were talking about Josh Richardson and his ability, or maybe it was the caller. He did average 4 assists last year for the Miami Heat.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he probably will be the similar kind of scorer. I think he'll be in the 12 range because I just don't think he'll
have his career average.
I don't think he'll have enough shots. And that's because you want this team to stay healthy. If something goes down and he becomes more of a prolific guy in their, you know, offense, it would be because somebody is hurt, would be my thing. Unless he becomes like your spot-up three-point shooter, where you're kicking it to him. You know, they really don't run plays, Joe. They have concepts, and it's a lot of movement, and it's a lot of move the ball. I mean, that's really what they want to be doing at all times.
Can I guess how many games Joel Embiid predicted?
Do the wins first.
Do the wins? Well, that's what I mean.
Because the other was how many he wants to play.
Oh, no. Okay. I'll do the wins first. 62.
60.
Well, okay.
He wants the number one seed, and he believes to get the number one seed, you must win 60 games.
Okay.
And actually, the irony is, Toronto won 58 last year.
59, I think.
But they were the second seed because Milwaukee won 6.
Right.
Yeah.
So. Exactly. And he'll play in, he wants to play in 65 games.
70.
Okay.
But he wants to play fewer minutes to start the season and build those minutes at the end. So last year he averaged
33 minutes.
Correct. And the year before, 30.
Okay. So he's,
I think he's going to be start the year out in that 30 range and maybe builds to being a guy who, well, by the time he gets to the playoffs, I know Brett would love to have him on 34, 35.
Sure. And I'm excited to see if he's quicker because you said he lost 20 pounds and got in better shape.
But keep in mind, he did a lot of rehab this year.
Yes, he did.
As opposed to, like, Tobias should look quicker defensively to you because he spent so much of his summer doing lateral footwork.
Okay.
So that should translate into looking quicker. Embiid, I'm not sure. But he will have less weight on him. You are correct.
Yep.
Let's hit Gerald in California. Gerald, thanks so much for your patience. Thanks for calling the Fanatic.
Thanks for having me. So it's funny. We're talking about the Sixers and their additions and subtractions. And the truth of it is we all love J.J. But let's be honest. J.J. was a defensive liability. And when you bring in a Richardson, you're getting a good defensive player there. And a guy who only shoots about 3% from three less than JJ. He has gets you more assists, significantly more assists, and he gets you slightly more rebounds. So I think from an athleticism, from a length, all of those ways, like, I don't see this as a drop-off at all. And we're getting an improving player. Richardson has improved in most categories every year for the last 4 years.
He definitely has improved every year, and he's only 26 years old. JJ's in his mid-30s. I would say this, that people have to always had to concentrate on where JJ was. And by the way, he was always a moving piece. That you could never leave him alone. And I would say...
But he also was literally a defensive liability.
Well, you're focusing on the postseason, because believe me, there's a lot of knockdown shooters like JJ in this league who... equal defensively, he happened to get exposed in particular in the postseason. And in fairness, the Sixers did not react properly to that. No, you make adjustments for that.
True. I have two more quick points. So
yes.
The other addition and subtraction is, of course, Horford and Butler. And the truth of it is, you'll probably be surprised to know, you know, Al Horford took more three-pointers per game than Butler has last year, and he shot a higher percentage. So I don't expect him to become some three-point sniper, but it's not this huge drop-off. Now, I think where the drop-off comes is in the playoffs, Butler clearly puts things into a different gear. But it's not the drop-off that I think most people think. And at the end of the day, let's be honest, this season whether we make it to a championship or not, is still coming down to one guy. The
Joel.
Guy who got the contract this offseason, and does he address showing up in the playoffs throughout seasons and shooting the ball?
Well, I actually think it comes down to the health of your guy in the middle.
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, if you need a healthy Joel Embiid. I mean, it doesn't change that he is the crown jewel of this thing. But I understand what you're saying with Ben and his willingness to shoot. It's huge. But I think that both of them are necessities to get where this team intends to go. And it has to be this year.
But I'll say this to you. If Joel gave you exactly what he gave you last year in the playoffs, and Ben stepped up in the way that we're talking about, they win that series and go to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Well, I would disagree, but because I think you'd still have to play those games. I don't think that's true. I think Joel's lack of being able to be himself hurt way more than Ben not shooting. Way more.
Way more.
Because you stuck him in the corner, and I appreciate the phone call, Gerald. You stuck Ben in the corner, and Jimmy was totally fine and could handle your fourth quarter pressure. It way more was Joel's inability to be who he's supposed to be. And by the way, that equaled 27 points per game in the regular season, 13.6 rebounds per game. This guy should average 30 points this year. It really should. It's not even going to be hard to go up a notch with this. And if you have the right spacing on the floor, I mean, you can't. If they're going to double him, he has places to kick it. He does. And you're either going to move the ball, and then somebody's going to take somebody off the dribble because they're going to be there quicker than a defender. And if you're going to try to play him straight up, I mean, I'm sorry. There's nobody in this league that can defend him straight up.
Actually, Al Horford used to do a good job on him.
Yeah. So it's funny you say that. Josh, if you have it, could you play me, please, the Al Horford on not having to guard Embiid anymore?
Like you said, just he's physical, he's strong, but he's also skilled. Mm-hmm. So that's something that you don't find every day, and that was very difficult to deal with. And I'm glad I don't have to guard him.
Well, he went on to say, "I appreciate the compliment because people said you played him so well."
Yeah, he did.
And he said, and I did. He was right. I had to look this up because he said I think he still had like 35 on me. He had 37 and 22 boards in one of the games against him last year. He had 23 and 14 in another game against Al last year. We'll go back one more. Joel had 34 and 16, and Horford had 4 points and 9 rebounds. So
might be a myth.
We felt like he played him so well because he didn't do the damage in closing games out. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like Horford would make a play or force Joel into a bad shot when they needed it at the end of a game.
How are they going to fix their turnover problem? How do you fix that?
I'd make people accountable for it. I mean, the two guys who are egregious with it are Ben and Joel.
And Joel, yeah.
Now, Joel turns it over because when he gets doubled, I feel like, well, it's not just when he gets doubled. I also feel like sometimes he's too far out away from the basket. I like it when you're two dribbles away, not four.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Four gets you in trouble.
And it gets him in trouble.
That's what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you fix it? You know, one of the problems is Brett will always say some of those turnovers is because that pace. Okay. Well, but now you're 5 years into your pace and that number has really not gone down enough. So I will say this. I would hope that as much as you want Ben to be shooting, you got to want to take better care of the ball.
Better care of the ball. Yeah. I mean, turnovers.
I mean, those two are in the top 3.7, I think. Was one of them was 3.7. They're both over 3 last year.
That's bad.
Right. So, and I want to say, I know for the previous, this is Brett's 6th year. They have been 1 or 2, and not meaning the lowest.
No,
highest.
The highest.
In turnovers in every year that he has been here.
They're killers. I talk about it all the time in football. They are the key to any game. And, you know, basketball is not that far off because, you know, you're thwarting an offensive possession and you're giving it up, maybe giving up points off of it.
And it puts a lot of pressure on your transition defense.
Right. Exactly.
Usually.
Yeah. So I don't know how they're going to fix that. because you're right. They've always been in the top, well, not always, but the last couple of years, one or two. And I think that's hurt them at times.
Yeah. I think it'll be interesting because, like, say, J.J. wouldn't be a guy who would handle the ball at all.
Right.
That you now have a Josh who can handle the ball in addition to a Ben and even Tobias. Because there were times when they made Tobias in those third quarters after not in the playoffs, but in the regular season after he'd been acquired, where they'd like put the ball in his hands in the third just to have him as a point forward just to see when the others would go to the bench. So I think you could be helped by having better ball handlers on the field, on the court at one time to maybe take better care of the ball.
You think Tobias was worth 5 years, $180 million?
You know what I say, Joe? The biggest thing to me is what will he deliver? And it was market. You want to keep a star. He's young enough for me. I think he's 26 also. And that's what the market was going to give him. So I say yes. I don't have a problem. I mean, I would say this. If I hadn't learned that Al Horford's was structured the way it is, I would say what you spent on him would have me nervous in the final year of that, maybe even in the final two, because he's getting older. But it's structured to be top-heavy in the beginning of it, and there are ways to have it where you can work your cap better in the back end of it.
And I'll confirm this in the break, but I believe he actually gets paid per year a little more than Kawhi.
Tobias?
With that new deal, I think he's at $34.5 million. I think Kawhi's just under that, but I'll check it in the break.
Yeah, that could be.
Which is amazing to me.
Well, keep in mind, he was staying with a team that was giving him, they could pay him more.
Right.
Kawhi was leaving to go somewhere else.
Sure.
So what they could give him was less. In addition to, Kawhi wanted Paul George to be able to come with him, which could have impacted whatever the difference is there. But I understand what you're saying. But the same, there was a couple of years ago, it's probably more than a couple now, Mike Conley was the highest paid guy in the league. No, I'm serious.
I know you're serious.
So, and you say to me, was he worth that? No, of course not. But he was the highest paid in the league because of circumstances.
Wow.
At the time. Yeah, Mike Conley.
That's crazy.
Keep that in mind.
It's crazy.
Let's check in with Andrew in Phoenixville. Andrew, thank you for calling the Fanatic.
Good evening. How are you guys?
Excellent. How are you?
Switch gears from the court to the ball field.
Absolutely.
I know the Philly season just ended. We're huge disappointment. Expectations were really high with obviously the lineup that we had on paper and everything. And it always comes to show. I mean, you can have an amazing lineup on paper, but if they don't, jive well together, if they aren't managed well together by Gabe, then they're not going anywhere. And I'm a little bit surprised where he hasn't been fired yet. I'm kind of a little bit amazed by that because obviously with Anaheim, their manager just got fired after 1 year.
Yep.
And then Joe Maddon just left the Cubs after what, 2 years after winning the World Series. So that kind of, raises some red flags of, could there have been some insider talk between Joe Maddon and obviously the Anaheim Angels that they want to get together.
Oh, wow.
before the season even ended. I find that a little bit coincidental. But getting back to the Phillies, I know there's a small list you guys were talking about this morning on the morning show of managers that are available. I think Dusty Baker was one of them. Joe Maddon was one of them.
Joe Girardi.
Buck Showalter.
And I find it also interesting that obviously Charlie Manuel came back as a hitting coach. Now, obviously, I don't foresee him becoming the manager again.
He's actually done because he thanked everybody, and he's going back to being a consultant.
Okay. I did not see that today or yesterday, so I apologize by
no
that.
Problem. No problem.
But, I'd like to see a manager come in who can really just work the pitchers, work the bullpen. I know we had a lot of injuries this year in the bullpen. I think we had 8 injuries, if I'm not mistaken, by that number. But, you know, we need a manager that can connect with making sure that Aaron Nola can go seven, maybe eight innings instead of five or six. And, you know, see if our bullpen can do better than they did this year. And obviously with Kingery, he didn't do well this year.
Hoskins was awful.
Yeah, Hoskins was awful. And obviously with off the field, and I can't remember the gentleman's name, it was domestic dispute.
Dubel Herrera.
We need players that can, you know, have a good family tightness around like the Eagles do. I mean, you don't see any problems with the Eagles. I mean, why are there problems with the Phillies? Why can't we have a dugout and a team that, you know, holds each other accountable for what they should be doing and hold them accountable for what they're not doing?
Like what, Andrew?
Well, I mean, if that story came out in the Eagles with Eduardo Herrera and with the Eagles team, I bet you anything there are going to be some captains like, what are you doing? You are not putting the team first.
But Andrew, as soon as it happened, he was no longer with the team.
Yeah.
He was suspended and then it was extended. And so he was never in the clubhouse from that point on. And it was nothing else ever came or any kind of behavior like that from anybody else. So I don't know where you're going with it.
But I also think that he could have come back and said, you know what, I'm sorry for everything. I'm going to work hard to be better teammate and be a better player and put the team first before myself. Give me another opportunity. Give me a chance. And I wish other players could have come out and said, you know what, we forgive him. We want him back. We want him to do better as a team. I didn't hear really anything of that from other teammates, if that makes sense.
I got it, Andrew, and I appreciate the phone call. I think what he didn't understand was that Major League Baseball did their own investigation with that, which was – the NFL does the same thing.
Yes, they do.
And so it becomes an issue like that. It's not a matter of want or not want in that moment where you would do that. Now, what happens in the future, I don't know. But in the moment, what the Phillies did was allow Major League Baseball to handle it themselves.
Yeah, and that was fine.
Yeah.
Never heard from again, and, you know, that was fine.
I mean, he was hardly the reason they ended up at 81 and 81.
Yeah.
If anything, at times his work ethic had been questioned in the past.
Yeah, I still think, I think two things. Gabe will be back.
Wow.
Gabe deserves to be back. I would make a change. I'll give you my reasons why I think he deserves another chance on the other side.
Yes. Mine is he's not back.
Okay.
Yeah. 610-632-0975. Jerry, sit tight. We're coming to you on the other side. We're talking baseball in terms of what you think and what you want the Phillies organization to do with their leadership. And we haven't even really brought in Matt Klentak and Andy McPhail into the conversation because it can be brought in. And also, what are your Sixers' expectations? So on one hand, we have an organization that has fallen way short of expectations, and we have one that we are putting a lot of expectation on because it's the beginning. What do you think in both situations? 610-632-0975. D-Line, I'm Joe Stazek here on 97.5 The Fanatic. The 8 o'clock hour is brought to you by Club Risqué, the Delaware Valley's premier gentlemen's club with three locations, Philly, Bristol, and Northeast Philadelphia. For more information, visit clubrisqué.com. So the Philadelphia 76ers will have their first practice tomorrow, though they have been in the gym. I know they've been coming in kind of one by one. I know they've played some scrimmages and that they spoke of a little bit today. But I was looking up that their first preseason game is Friday, October 11th. So that will be on the road against the Hornets. They'll play a preseason game against Orlando. And then two more after that before having opening night at home against the Boston Celtics. And Boston Celtics will bring Kemba Walker with them. They'll look a little different this year. Kemba, Jason Tatum will still be there. Jaylen Brown will still be there. Those two guys played with Team USA this summer. That was one of the things that Tobias was asked, because he turned Team USA down.
Yeah.
And they said, you know, do you have any concerns that you may not ever get invited again? I did not realize that his foot was not right. I don't remember him having an injury.
I don't remember that, no.
But he wanted to make sure his foot was right. And by the time that was, it would have been too late to have enough practice time with Team USA, and thus he turned it down. He did, however, say that he believes by his play that will take place this year, that somewhere in the future he will get that invite again.
I hope he does.
Yeah.
You know, and that's
He's a great guy.
That's a responsible thing to do if you're dealing with an injury. You remember Joel Embiid played in the All-Star game, then he missed the next eight games. So I think it is responsible on Tobias Harris's part, and he'll get invited back.
Yeah. And if he doesn't, I mean, you know.
Yeah. It is what it is.
Yeah, you move on. I do, and I'll bring it up. Remind me later to tell you something, that a quote from Markelle Fultz's media day that
okay.
I found
fantastic, quite interesting. Fantastic.
We'll leave that out there. We'll do that in the 9 o'clock hour.
Okay.
We'll touch on our good friend Markelle. Let's check in with Jerry in Newtown. Jerry, thank you so much. Thanks for calling 97.5 The Fanatic.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Excellent.
How are you, bro?
Hey, so I just wanted to call in because I wanted to see what you guys thought. So defensively, I'm very excited to kind of see what Brett brings to the table with this lineup.
Sure.
Offensively, it's not that I'm so concerned, but last year we did do a lot of dribble handoffs,
yep.
Things like that. I felt like that was more of J.J. Redick's style. With the different lineup they have, it didn't look like Tobias too much was, I don't know if it was just a familiarity thing or he just doesn't like that type of play. But with the Pelicans, as far as Horford, you got two traditional big men down low. Tobias, who didn't really seem like he was too familiar or just didn't like it, like I said. And then I'm not really too familiar with Richardson. How do you see the offense? Do you see him changing it at all? Do you see him adapting personnel?
No. He's definitely going to have to make some adjustments given his personnel. And he will. I asked, and he definitely will make some adjustments there. I think the one thing, and Al Horford even said it himself today, one of the really great things about Horford, whatever you ask of him, he can do. So yeah. I wouldn't worry about him clogging the lane or needing to be in the low post with Embiid or even to be effective. I think he has a nice enough perimeter shot that he could get his shots where he needs to not clog that lane for Embiid. And I also, I hope you know, he is an excellent passer.
Oh, yeah. No, Horford is not really, I'm not concerned with Horford at all. I'm super excited about the addition of him. My thing is I don't see what type of offense he'll be trying to run, because I felt like last year you had J.J. Redick shooting 8 threes a game.
Yes.
Which is just, it's a ton of threes. So then you had a lot of individual ball with Jimmy, and then obviously JoJo's going to get his touches.
So what you're going to need, and they know this, the ball's going to have to move.
Yes.
So the ball moves, and you know, when you let it go, now you move. And if the constant movement is eventually you have the defense on their heels, somebody has an open lane or a baseline to drive. And I think the other big thing that he is counting on, he says rebounding, and he said, don't just think of us as a rebounding team at the defensive end. He wants to be one of the top offensive rebounding teams and believes he can generate offense just by going to the glass.
Yeah, I really hope he kind of sticks. I remember reading a quote earlier when we had made these additions about him going to this bully ball
yep.
type of mentality.
Well,
and I absolutely love that idea.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very interested just to see kind of how they work this new offense, because I felt like he really had a, I know a lot of people didn't like what he was doing last year, but I felt it fit the personnel that we had.
I totally
so
agree.
I'm really interested to see kind of what he pulls out this year.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. And they have to be disciplined to do what suits the personnel. You know, that's on those guys. But I think one of the things I do like, and I appreciate the call, Jerry, is that, Joe, they have, like, Ben and Joel are now, they're no longer considered you know, new to this league.
Right.
These guys have plenty of experience under their belt. Al Horford's 13 years. He knows what he's doing. And Tobias, for his young age, has played a lot of basketball.
Yeah, he's been around for a while.
Yeah, he's moved around. He's moved with teams, not because people didn't like him. He's valuable. And so I think there's enough knowledge of knowing, okay, spacing matters, moving the ball matters, and whatever he's doing, and I'm going to his clinic of where they really do. It's concepts of move the ball and move bodies. That's really what they're doing, and it is a constant motion that you will see.
You know what I like? Last year in the playoffs, it was painful watching the team play when Joel Embiid was on the bench. They would go from an 8-point lead to being down 7 in like 3 minutes. So they have Horford now. He can spell Embiid at the 5, and then maybe Tobias moves to the 4. I think that's a huge move because they really had no one to step in and you know, keep things at bay at least while Joel Embiid was on the bench getting a blow.
Sure. I wanted to see, just for argument's sake, Milwaukee was actually the leading rebounding team last year.
Wow.
Interesting. But from an offensive rebounding standpoint, top three. This is actually the top one, is a little surprising to me. Oklahoma City, Denver, Portland. And I'm not surprised with Denver because I'd be curious if Jokic was a big part of that. And in Portland, before he got hurt in the playoffs, Jokic, formerly of Denver also, yeah. Might be. Both those guys have great hands. That's the only reason I'm thinking they played a factor in there. But you know, these guys have plenty of big bodies, go to the glass and put it in, you know, get putbacks as well.
You get me all excited now.
Yeah.
I'm getting really excited for the season to begin. Yeah. I can't wait to see this team. I'm almost as curious as I am excited. I want to see what you're talking about and how it's going to work together and everything's going to fit. It might take a little while for the new guys to get acclimated with the old guys, but it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. A different style of basketball.
It's funny that you say that about getting acclimated.
Yeah.
So I asked Brett, I'm like, you know, a lot of time you say you want that number one seed. Usually what happens is it's the team that stays healthy and gets off to a quick start.
Mm-hmm.
I have a personal experience of the 2001 team. They jumped out to 10-0. They stayed healthy until Theo got hurt. And at the All-Star break, they only had 14 losses. So, I mean, that's what happens. And so I said, last year you were always reminding us, you know, especially going into the playoffs, you know, we've only had 20-some games together.
Together.
You know, that can't be an excuse this year.
No.
You got to get it together quickly. Because you have high expectations, you got places you need to be, and you got to get it together quickly. And you have guys who've been around enough basketball to be able to do it.
Yeah, they have experience.
Exactly.
But it took them a while to get acclimated last year, although it was quicker than I thought. But you're right. Heading into the playoffs, they had played together like, you know, 10 times or something ridiculous.
And Embiid was a big part of that because he wasn't playing.
Right, so. And he has to stay healthy to a degree. Because I don't think he's ever going to be totally healthy. He always has some kind of problem and nagging this or nagging that or the sniffles. So he's got to stay healthy. That's, to me, the key to this Sixers team.
Yeah. I mean, if one goes, the key is his health, the other person will call in and say Ben's ability to shoot.
To shoot.
Yes. And I do want to tell you that I heard Ben, and this is not an exact quote, but for the first time in his time being here, where I felt like he's like, everybody misses shots. No kidding. We knew that. But see, he shoots a very high percentage. And it was as if a light bulb had gone off in his head this summer. Like, you know, all right, so I might suffer and shoot a lower percentage. And somebody must have told him, like, yeah, that happens with everybody.
Do you think he's more confident? Did he come off as more confident? Because I think he hesitated taking those shots because he didn't want to embarrass himself.
Well, he did say the biggest thing is confidence, and I have to be confident to shoot them. Now, I still haven't seen it.
Right.
But for him to actually say it, I never heard him address his shooting particularly. He would always say, I got to work on everything.
Right.
I always want to be a better player in all regards. So, you know, he has catchphrases for everything. No, I'm saying
stock sound bites.
Stock sound bites, Joe. All right, we're going to also hear on what Joel Embiid's goals are when we return, because those are important too. And we'll have to probably replay Ben's position on whether or not he will shoot, because you might have missed it. And it's
even when you hear it, you might miss it in 3 seconds.
Correct. But we'll play it again. We might put it on a loop.
Let's do it.
610-632-0975. Charles, you're up next on the other side, and you are listening to 97.5 The Fanatic. So it's a Monday night. A little strange because usually we're still dissecting what happened with the Eagles on Sunday.
And we'll get into them a little bit later.
Yeah. Because they can finally now turn their attention to the Jets.
It's Jets week.
Yeah. We got to put that Packers in the rearview mirror.
Yep. Time to move on. Hey, good job by the Saints last night hooking us up.
Right.
The defense was phenomenal.
It really was.
And Lattimore had an unbelievable game on Amari Cooper, and they just stifled Dallas.
Unbelievable.
You know, Teddy Bridgewater took that awful sack, so it moved him out of field goal range late. They had to punt the ball, and Dallas just needed to get in field goal range and did not. They chased Dak all over the place, and, you know, kudos to the Saints.
Yeah, so that now only separates the Eagles and Cowboys by a game.
By a game.
Yeah.
And they're coming up on...
And the Cowboys have the Packers at home this week.
Yes, they do.
So that's an interesting one because the Packers, while the Eagles have time to, maybe breathe a sigh of relief and say, we got that one and now we're 2-2, fine.
Sure.
But the Packers took it on the chin on their field.
And have 10 days to rest up.
To rest up and think about it.
Yep.
Yeah. And there's only three unbeatens left. The Chiefs.
Patriots.
And 49ers.
49ers. I love that story. I love that story.
I actually thought Detroit was going to beat the Chiefs.
They should have beat them. Did you see how they lost?
Yeah, I saw.
You saw that 100-yard fumble return? They should have won.
Yeah.
Should have won the game outright.
That's two now for Detroit.
Yeah.
Two. One was a bad timeout call that took away their first down that would have ran
the
clock out.
That was awful. My goodness.
And then that.
Should have won the game. Maybe they're better than we thought. You know, they hung with the Chiefs. They beat the Eagles on the road.
Sure.
I think they beat the Chargers earlier this year. And
they tied the Cardinals.
Yeah, which was a bad tie. They gave up 18 points in the fourth quarter. But, you know, maybe we underrated them. You know, they are, well, now they're defeated, but they were this close to being undefeated. Did you hear Andy Reid after the game?
No, but I saw them, they've played it, but the audio wasn't up. What did he say?
He said, hey, guys, Mozart, you know.
This was in the locker room.
This was in the locker room.
Yeah, they played it on Monday Night Football.
Oh, they did?
Oh, yeah.
Monday Night Football.
Well, do they do the segment on Monday Night Football that I find very entertaining?
Yes,
it's like,
it is.
Come on, man. That Randy
I love the
us.
Come on, man. Yeah.
That was Andy Reid was come on, man.
Because he said Mozart never painted a perfect picture. And we're like, Mozart?
He
dude.
Didn't say that.
Yeah, he did.
He meant Michelangelo.
He said Mozart.
No wonder he made Come On
Man. It was
man.
Great. Oh, it was great.
Wow.
How about that?
He confused Mozart and Michelangelo?
Yes.
Whoa.
I don't think that the players picked up on it, but...
How did that video get out?
Yeah. Well, that's, they have NFL Films or whoever in the locker room, and they do that segment as well where they play sound up from a little speech after the game, and that was his speech after the game to his team.
I got two words for you. I'm staying right here.
That's a start. Now I'm going to have to go listen to it. Because
it's outstanding.
Oh, like I said, they played it.
We do have it. It was on the morning show, so we'll try to hook it up.
Okay, that would be fun. All right, Charles has been super patient, and he wants to talk about the Sixers' expectations. Charles, how are you tonight? Thanks for calling the Fanatic.
Hey, D. Hey, Joe. Big dog.
Hey, Charles. How you doing, bud?
Good, brother. Two quick things. I want to get into Wentz with you, Joe, at the end. But first, I have no problems. I have no total confidence in the Sixers this year. I'm as confident as I was before the 82-83 season when I knew they were going to win the world championship. Now, I don't know they're going to win the world championship this year, But I'm relatively confident they're going to be in the finals, and here's why. I just feel like this team is going to lock you down defensively. They lost a little bit with JJ, but I think people are underrating Josh Richardson. He's way better defensively than JJ, and he can knock down the three-point shot, too. I think the team's deeper. And also, I think an intangible is that the Sixers, especially Embiid and Simmons, know they left something out there last year against the Raptors. I mean, the Raptors, you have to say, were the better team because they went on to win the World Championship. But anybody who watched that series knows that the Sixers should have won that series.
They blew it. Yeah, you're right.
It was lost opportunities.
Yep.
You give the Raptors credit. But the fact is, I think the Sixers know this, and I think with the more talent defensively, I'm very confident they're coming out of the East. I'm like, there's really the only team challenger I think is Milwaukee, and I think the Sixers will take care of Milwaukee. Now, Joe, about the Wentz thing.
Yeah.
I always enjoy your articles on Wentz.
Thank you.
And, you know, I commented when you put them on Facebook. I think you're being a little unfair to Wentz in two respects. Your major points on your Wentz articles are always, well, he hasn't let them into the playoffs yet, even though in 17 he really was the main reason they were there. And he hasn't won a playoff game yet, but he hasn't been able to play in one because he's been hurt. And also that he doesn't lead game-winning drives. But I'll say this year, I mean, he puts the ball in Nelson Aguilar's hands. What can he do about that? In the Detroit game, he hits J.J. Arcadia Whiteside in the hands at the end of the game on a third and or fourth and 15. I mean, I'm not saying Wentz is perfect. I think he's a top 10 quarterback right now. But the thing is, I think you're a little hard on him. Granted, he comes out slow in games sometimes. I'll give you that criticism. But I think this guy's an elite player. And I think if the defense can improve, especially in the secondary, I believe this is a Super Bowl team.
I give you that he's an elite player. The issues I raised were this, and you're right. Aguilar catches that ball. They might have another win, although there was 2 minutes left in the game. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside catches that ball. They probably win the game against Detroit. But in the Atlanta game, because he came back two plays later and hit Aguilar on a 43-yard pass, so they had the ball at the 18-yard line, you know, first down and 10 and couldn't move it from there. And in the Detroit game, after the blocked field goal, they had the ball at the 50, only needing to move 20 yards, and they couldn't get it done. So, you know, maybe I'm a little harsh on him. I love him, just to get that out there, Charles. I do love the guy. But I think he needs to get better in some areas.
And final thing, guys, I think the Eagles are going to take control of this division. I think they'll be 4-2 going into the Dallas game, and I think the Eagles take care of the Cowboys on October 20th.
I do, too.
All right. Thank you,
Thanks, Charles.
Yeah, that would mean that they beat both the Jets and Minnesota, which Minnesota took it on the chin against the Bears.
I'm sorry. I'm but off the Kirk Cousins bandwagon.
You were on it? I'm off it.
I liked him. Oh. Going into Minnesota,
man,
I liked
there's
him.
There's a lot of people down on him. But I will say this. Again, Chicago's defense. I mean, come on.
Was nasty.
Right. But it's not like Minnesota's the only one that has seen that.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, they do it. It seems to me, even the game they lost to the Packers, they held the Packers to 10
points. Their defense was sensational.
Yeah.
Sensational.
So I don't know what to think of Minnesota, I guess, is basically my point.
I don't either.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's
if
a little
Dalvin
difficult.
Cook cranks it up.
Correct.
But Kirk Cousins in big games is he's like 5-27. You know, I liked him. I liked him better than most people did when he was with the Skins, but I'm off. He's been horrible. And he got that big contract, like $28 million a year, something ridiculous. I mean, he cashed in, but, you know, Minnesota, I believe by now, has learned that they made a mistake.
Sure.
Yeah, a big one.
Yeah, I will say when he says that he thinks the Eagles will take this division or take over this division, however Charles wanted to phrase it, I will also say been helped a little bit by other teams like the Saints not having a Drew Brees, which is all fine.
Right.
There are opportunities out there because of circumstances, too. So grab the bull by the horns,
sure.
I guess is my point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you. I think that they obviously win against the Jets. That would be a disastrous loss if they actually lost that game. They win that game.
Poor Luke Falk.
Oh, my God, right? He's getting thrown into the fire.
Yeah. I think he was counting on Sam Darnold to be healthy by this. I think they were.
Sure they were.
You know?
Yeah,
I mean,
sure they
come
were.
On.
This is a weird injury, if you want to call it an injury. And sometimes it takes months to get that out of your system and be right.
I felt bad. I actually listened to Sam Darnold's press conference today. He was so uncomfortable having to talk about, you know, it's mono.
It's mono.
But everybody
it's
wants
time
to talk.
For bed. That means you. No hot girls. No.
But nobody wants to talk about that part. They just want to talk about the spleen. And it's like, it's a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's a shame.
All right, Max, sit tight. We're coming to you on the other side. You'll kick off our 9 o'clock hour. He's Joe Stazak. I'm D. Lynam. And you're listening to 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.